And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. And, you know, I don't know why that popped into my head. I often, every time I do that intro for one of these pods here at On to Waveland, again, it's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic, and I think about Topps, I often think about the 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle and how much I want it. And it just popped into my head today as I was reading it. So I've been like, there's no other context other than just me lusting after that card. I just, you know, even if it were like a crappy version of it that's like not actually worth much, just so I could have it and be like, yeah, I got a 52 Topps Mickey Mantle.
That's one of those holy grails, right? I'll quickly talk about this so we don't derail the whole podcast, but my dad and I collected for a long time, like I shouldn't say a long time, a few years in the early 90s. So right when the first card boom was happening, yeah. We'd go to card shows every summer, like multiple card shows. Like it was like the thing I looked forward to the most, going to card shows. But we had some pretty sweet cards, like Nolan Ryan rookie card, Hank Aaron rookie card, like multiple Michael Jordan rookie cards. So we had a nice collection going back in the 90s. It's no longer around, but it was a nice collection.
All right. So we can talk some Cubs now. Speaking of St. Louis, that is where the Cubs are right now, playing in a series that I think if we had looked ahead, let's not even say April, let's say spring training, you know, when it was, I think we were all pretty much in the same like 50-50 bucket of like whether the Cubs would compete, not whether they would win the division, but whether they would compete or not or be a sell-off. And I think that we would have thought this series could be pivotal in the decision of like, okay, are the Cubs still in it? Are they selling? All that. I don't know that we would have said a mid to late July Cubs-Cardinals series would be like the decisive one for the division, but definitely impacting the decisions these teams were going to make. And that obviously is not the case because the Cubs' decision has been made that they're going to be selling in the 10 days ahead in the run-up to the trade deadline. The Cardinals, by contrast, it's interesting. They started this series tied in the standings with the Cubs, and you definitely do not get the sense that they have made their decision yet. Now, Sahadev wrote a great piece at The Athletic. Oh, you know, I think I forgot to say, you know, I'm Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney of The Athletic. Got it obligatory, do that. We got so into the baseball cards thing that we did get sidetracked. But that's how great the Topps Project 70 is. See, you just start talking baseball cards and then you're just lost in it. That's a freebie, by the way, Topps. You don't got to pay for that one. They start the series. Cubs lost completely non-competitive game last night on Monday. And yet it's not as if that one game was the deciding factor between, oh, Cubs are definite sellers, Cardinals are definitely not, because they came into the series tied. And I think you did a great job in your article, Sahadev, noting, among many other things, just about what this series is not, that the Cardinals can at least point to, hey, we're playing better now, and we've got some really important key players coming back. And I don't know, would our perspective be different on the Cubs at 8-9 games out in the Central if it was like, well, but then this great starting pitcher is going to be coming back in a few weeks? I don't know. Because what I think about is we were already operating from a presumption that if things weren't great for the Cubs this year, they were going to sell. Like that was the default position. And I don't think that was true for the Cardinals, even as they have like an older crew, even as Yachty and Wainwright are back for one more year. And I don't know. I don't know what that difference is. Is it just that the Cardinals don't have marketable pieces, and so it's like, eh, just keep it together and do what we can?
They went in before the season, right? It was this winter that they traded for Arenado. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a pretty significant indication that you're looking to win this particular season, while the Cubs sold their big, they moved their best player on a big contract. If you're really looking at it, I mean, who was performing the best on that team in 2020? It was Yu Darvish, right? And they traded him. So, I mean, I think both teams kind of indicated what direction they hope to go. So the Cardinals are going to try and stick around. And someone in the press box brought this up. One of the Cardinals writers brought up that, listen, I think the media on both sides of town have kind of accepted like what's happening with both these teams. But the Cardinals, they can sell themselves Miles Michaelis and Jack Flaherty are coming back, and they have 13 games left with the Brewers, and all those games will be played likely, unless they're setbacks, with Michaelis and Flaherty back. So I think Oviedo is back today for the Cardinals to pitch, and I didn't look at his numbers, but I think he's been strong, right? Or am I completely wrong on that? Has he not been?
I believe
good?
He's improved as it's okay. gone along.
Okay, and so I mean they have. I mean that's where the Cubs are completely lacking. If the Cubs had 2 to 3 quality to Cy Young caliber starters coming back, I think it would still be hard, right? That would make this a little more difficult, at least the outside narrative. I think Jed would see 9.5 games and say, man, I can't rely on guys coming back and hope for a hot run in the second half, right, with all these, if you're all things considered. So I think it's just different situations. They have two older guys that are trying to go for one more run in Wainwright and Molina. You know, those guys aren't trade pieces. Those guys are closer to retirement, right? And then you're talking about trading for Arenado. They recently extended Goldschmidt a couple years ago. They have two big veteran bats at the corner infield spot. It's just, yeah, it's very different situations, but it's also very weird to be covering a game in July with these two teams, and neither of them are really that close to first place. It feels like it's going to take something very drastic for either one of them to get in this race, and that I was surprised how long it's been since that's occurred. I looked it up. 2010 was the last time neither team made the playoffs, which is, you know, not crazy, but that's quite a while. But the thing was, the Cardinals were in first place as late as like mid-August in that season. So it wasn't like they were out of it in July. The last time both teams were this far out of it in July, maybe not even this far out of it, but just, you know, looked like they weren't going to buy at the deadline, was 1999, which I just think is crazy to think about. And now, obviously, majority of that is the Cardinals, but the Cubs have set a new standard the last, you know, what, 6-7 years. So I think this is a very different era we're in, and it's kind of weird to see neither of those teams competing. I don't expect it to last long. That's the one thing. I think if we're going to bet on which teams in the Central over the next decade will you know, kind of be the cream of the crop, I think it's going to be one of those two. But I'm always low on the Brewers, as the podcast listeners know. So
always, we're always low on the Brewers and always wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sahade had it in his piece. Well, the attendance was like 38,000 last night,
something
like that.
Yeah, I think it was 38.9 or 38, something like that.
Pretty soft, and I think that's been the case at Busch Stadium. I think that's going to be another reason why they can't just raise the white flag on the season, beyond the fact that they made the Arenado move, they made the Goldschmidt move. I mean, if Bryant and Rizzo were under a contract for multiple years at terms that were acceptable to the Cubs, I think that might be. And if, you know, if the Cubs had like produced a homegrown pitcher, like since Jeff Samardzija was playing football at Notre Dame, like that would be another reason why the Cardinals can point to, they can credibly point to, like, we have these pitchers and we're going to have more pitchers coming. And I don't think the Cubs are in that position yet. And no doubt everyone undersells the Brewers. And I think that's probably the Cardinals too. Like, I don't think they deep down think the Brewers are this great runaway team. And the Cardinals will probably be proven wrong in the end, because I think their product is a little stale too. But I don't think they can tell the great fans of St. Louis that we're giving up right now. Like, they need that kind of, whether or not it's illusion, they need that idea out there that we're still trying and that we will be playing meaningful baseball in September.
Yeah, it's interesting how there's obviously the Arenado and Goldschmidt thing, that they're there for a while, so that makes Seloff seem less plausible. But then it's also, like Sahadev said, having Yachty and Wainwright there for one more year. And it might be perpetually one more year for a while, but you don't know when they're just going to hang it up. And so it's like you can't it's almost like what the Cubs have with Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez times 20 in terms of like the, we can't do that to our fans. You know, we can't be like, okay, it's the last year we have them and we're giving up.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Which I guess is an interesting transition to those three that permeate so much of the discourse out there, but I don't know how much we have talked about it on the podcast. Maybe some with Bryant, much, much less, if anything, with Javi Baez and Anthony Rizzo, that... we know the Cubs are going to be selling. We know who the most obvious trade candidates are. And you could make an argument that Bryant falls into that because it remains very unlikely, in my view, that if he reaches free agency, that he ultimately re-signs with the Cubs for reasons that work in both directions. I just find that very unlikely. And I think by contrast, we have harbored the thought for maybe as much as multiple years now, that when it came time that Javi Baez and Anthony Rizzo were approaching free agency, a deal would get done and they would stick around for a while. Rizzo, you know, being the face of the franchise, the heart and soul of the team, been around since, you know, the start of the original rebuild. And then Javi Baez being, you know, he's carved out his own relationship with Chicago, his own next level fan interest in El Mago. You just didn't see those guys necessarily walking away. And yet here we are 10 days before the trade deadline, and these guys both are approaching free agency. And although the it has resurfaced that, of course, the Cubs would want to probe these guys potentially for extensions before considering, okay, what are we going to do on the trade front? My question, I suppose, is what do we actually think is going to happen over the next 10 days? How plausible is it that actual substantive extension talks will take place with either or both guys? And you could include Chris Bryant if the spirit moves you in your thoughts. And how plausible is it that either or both, or again, include Bryant as you like, could actually be traded. I have some thoughts, but again, we've created this dynamic where I get to set up these challenging questions and you guys respond first, and then I get to swoop in with like an ancillary point at the end, and it's like, man, Brett always just has like an extra little thoughtful point at the end. And it's Bill. That's because I
really wrap that up nicely.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's, you know, Brian just feels obvious to me that he is going to be marketed heavily as far as being moved at this deadline. We'll see if they actually...
I agree, yeah. I agree, but I just want to make sure I'm going to pin you down, because I'm going to write an article based on what you say. So how does Sharma says? No, I'm just kidding. But do you think the Cubs are probably actively talking about moving Brian rather than just being like, yeah, we're open to whatever if someone wants. Now, I'm not talking in terms of strategy, because like it may still be the strategy where you like want to sit back and be like, come to us. But do you think the Cubs would like to move Bryant for a good return right now, as opposed to like we're just open?
Yeah. Yes. I mean I think they understand that an extension is as close to 0% as you can get. I just don't see a scenario where he's not going to re-sign now before the deadline. I mean, there's no chance that there's an extension happening here. And then I've just kind of accepted that that's not the direction they're going in the offseason. Yes, it could make a lot of sense as far as you have a lot of money. This is a star when he's locked in. He's an MVP candidate. But I think there's just numerous reasons why it could why it doesn't make sense as far as where they are and what they're trying to do. I think they'd like to get like their next star. They'd like to be much younger and maybe different in certain ways. Although he's proving to be more dynamic than I think we even really understood with his ability to play the outfield this year. So this isn't as true as I thought a year ago, because his ability to play center field doesn't seem like just throw him out there in an emergency situation. It seems like he's pretty passable out there, surprisingly, and he likes to do it. So more power to him. I think it's either if they can't find the right deal, they'll take the chance of the whatever compensation is in the offseason, because I don't think we know anymore, right? With the CBA expiring, it could change.
Well, what's going to happen? This is like a total aside. So the deadline to make a qualifying offer to a free agent is going to come quite a bit before the CBA expires on December 1st. It's going to be a few weeks before that. Now, you're making a qualifying offer on the basis of compensation that wouldn't come until after the CBA kicks in. So what I suspect will happen is if that rule and process is changed in the CBA, it will either kick in a year later, or it will change only for like buying teams. You know, the draft pick compensation cost will go away for buying teams, but not what you get. That's total ex post facto stuff. I can't see them harming teams like that. I guess I've been fooled before.
I still see a team pushing in and giving enough of an offer for Bryant. I still think, I just have this feeling that that's going to happen, but I could be totally off. That's not based on anything other than, you know, like random chatter with the scouts and whatnot, what people's gut feelings are and what would I kind of feel. The other two I don't think are going anywhere, not this deadline. And if I had to choose, I'd say I'd be very surprised if Javi isn't back with the Cubs next year. And a little less confidence with Rizzo, but similar. I'd be a little surprised. I'd expect both of those guys to be back. And that's just, like, it just makes a lot of sense, in my opinion. They're not going to have these crazy contracts. Bryant likely is going to get a pretty mega, like a mega deal, a true mega deal, and unless he just craters the next 3 months, right? And I just think what the Cubs plan is and what they want to do, they don't want to bottom out. They have no desire to be a losing team for the next 4 or 5 years. Really, they don't want to be a losing team next year. Like, they want to be right back in it. Like, I ended that piece saying by next July, these two teams should be battling for first if things go right, right? That's what we want to see. I'm sure all of us would prefer to watch a team battling for first place. I also think they just don't want to go that far down. And I know Javi is frustrating. I say this all the time. I know how frustrating he is. I see it. I just think he's so ultra talented, and when he's locked in, you take the good with the bad with him. I know it coming off last night, it's hard for me to say this, but he's a plus-plus defender at short, at a premium position, and when he's right at the plate, even now, he's not even playing his best, and he's above average offensive player. I know he strikes out a lot. I know that's a problem for Cubs fans as far as this lineup goes, but he brings, if you put together the right lineup, he fits in perfectly with it. It's fine. His skill set works if you build around him properly and put different skill sets around him and have enough contact, have a leadoff guy that gets on base, and he's going to rack up the counting numbers. He's going to hit for a ton of power. When all is said and done, he'll be, you know, 10 to 15% above league average with his OPS, and maybe even better if he's really having a great season. So I think that's worth it, especially when it's a shortstop. You know, depending on the price, depending on what they can come to, I think they know what they want, right? They've been with these guys for so long. They've talked it out for years now. They understand where each side is at. It's just not going to happen in the next 2 weeks. That's not realistic, in my opinion, but I don't see them going anywhere. That would be the one that surprises me if one of those two is moved. If they depart via free agency, I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be a little surprised I'd be pretty surprised though with Baez, because anything can happen, but still.
Bryant is in a separate category because the Cubs put him in a separate category, and his play has separated him from those other guys we're talking about. I mean, he was the guy that the Cubs were using in discussions with the Rockies regarding Nolan Arenado. And even if the conversations with the Mets were rather brief or preliminary, not to the extent that maybe other outlets had reported, KB was still a target of the Mets in the offseason. And he is the one who's playing at an all-star level this year, not these other guys. And I think that Sahadev's right, that Jed knows what it would take to sign Javi and Rizzo like tomorrow, and they haven't done that yet. And you know, Rizzo had a concrete offer at the end of spring training that we're not really sure about with Javi or KB, but we do know that Javi's camp was well down the road talking to the Cubs in frequent communication, if not daily communication, before the pandemic shut everything down in March 2020. So there's so much history, so much information has been exchanged between both sides that I don't really know if how much time Jed has in the day to be like engaging in trade talks with like 29 other teams and getting a feel for things and then still having to gauge Javi and KB's whereabouts on an hourly basis. Like, they know. And I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense to jump in when you're this close to free agency on the player side, or from a management perspective, being like, to Brett's point, we don't know what the CBA is going to look like next year. Why are we going to go all in now? Because the only reason the Cubs would do a deal right now would be on extremely club-friendly terms when, you know, Rizzo and Baez are not playing to the level that they think they can. So, like, why would they sign on the dotted line right now?
Yeah, you'd have to have a situation where, for whatever reason, whatever turned from spring training to now, a player became really concerned about his ability to capitalize in the offseason and free agency, because it's the first crack at free agency for these guys. And that's meaningful both in terms of establishing your market, which, by the way, matters both to the team and the player, because I think that a lot of times we forget the Cubs would be curious to know what's Javi's value on the market in this free agent class with a bunch of shortstops. I think that's information for them too. And it's also just an opportunity that, as much as these guys might love their time in Chicago and they want to stay in Chicago and they want to stay with the Cubs, I mean, you don't know until you get out there and you find out that, like, oh, there's several other places and teams that are interested in me that are maybe set up in the future in a way that I'd like better. You just don't know. And so I think that, like Patrick said, it takes a lot to sign away a guy from free agency at this time of year. And I don't think that fear has developed with these guys that, like, oh no, I was wrong in spring training, and I realize now that I really should make sure I sign. Because here's the other thing with the CBA, we we often hear it framed as a, uh-oh, don't know what the financial state of the league is going to be next year, so guys should be concerned. Well, it can go the other direction, too. Like, the structure of the league's finances and the way the money is doled out to players could change in such a way that it's like, oh, never mind, these guys are worth a lot more than we thought, and so suddenly Rizzo's going to get much more, and Javi's going to get much more. So I agree that it would be shocking. I mean, I'm trying to think of what it would be if Chris Bryant signed an extension in the next 10 days. Like, I don't think there is a parallel in my sports history, including the Cubs winning the World Series, that was a level of shock that. That's how little I expect that to be a thing.
And I mean, no, this is like the tone of like every time we ask, like I talked to Rizzo the other in Arizona, it's like, you can see like the wheels turning and it's kind of like, you know, what do I say to this? You know what I mean? And like, same with Jed, when he's asked about it in the dugout on the record with cameras on, it's like, we don't want to rule anything out. We don't want to say the wrong thing. We don't want to insult the other side. Like, clearly, you know, everyone involved can see a scenario where they come back. Like, they all love Chicago. They love the Cubs. There's nothing against, it's not personal, but it's like, there's so much history here. They're just kind of like, yeah, we'll see. And then ... you know, like, there's not like a whole lot of conviction, I feel like, on either side here. This is trying a very broad level of like pounding the table, let's get a deal done. And there's no, you know, reason that they can't test free agency and come back. And there's a lot of pressure on every side here of Jed to get this right, the players' agents to deliver after years of waiting for this, and then the players kind of weighing their legacy and their comfort level and, you know, kind of what they want in terms of being part of a winning team for the next several years. There's just so many unknowns here that I think you're right. It would be a stunner if there's any some sort of like extension here.
And let me add, you know, too.
Brett,
No.
Go ahead, Brett.
You let me add, sir. I used the transitional phrase, let me add, too, so I get the jump. I was just going to say that in addition to the unknowns and when, like, I'm thinking about Jed Hoyer having to answer these questions and him being very cautious and mindful of all these things, what you also don't want to do is, in the same vein of you never know what's going to happen, well, you never know if there is some trade partner out there that is going to come at you aggressively on a Javi Baez offer, that you don't want it getting out there that, like, there was someone said something in the media about a $200 million expectation for Javi. I don't know how true that is or not. That seems, I think that might have just been sort of a comment about the market in general. But you don't want it out there necessarily that this guy's, that you have had negotiations with this guy and his expectations on a contract are egregiously high. Because if you are a team that's thinking of trading for a Javi Baez right now, no, you're not doing it specifically so you can extend him. You're doing it so you get the impact this year. But, like, you would like to know that you have a chance of extending him if he comes and he likes it and is happy. You don't want that information out there if you're the Cubs that, like, by the way, it is definitely just a rental. You will have no chance of doing anything else. And so I think that that's probably another one of those just, like, you never know. So, like, let's answer the questions about the extension stuff. Yes, we would love to plumb them for more information because I'm sure the Cubs would like to have more information. I'm sure the players would like to have more information. But, like, in reality, nothing is going to happen on that front.
I completely forgot my point.
Sorry. You should have said,
Patrick said
you should have said, just let me
that,
add.
I remember it. So there's this concept going out there that Cubs players are unhappy and treated unwell with the Cubs. And I've never, Patrick, correct me if I'm wrong, but I, like, from my understanding is, as far as the way they're treated and the way their families are treated, they go above and beyond with the Cubs. Like, everything that I've talked to with people, like, they love the way the Cubs treat them and the way they're, especially the family atmosphere and the way they're treated really well to the point that some other people are like, whoa, that's kind of crazy how much they let them do and how much they give their freedom to their families and like kind of coddle them to an extent. And that's like off the field stuff, not like contract negotiations, all that other stuff aside. I'm talking about the way they're treated. Once you're part of the Cubs organization, it sounds like they're treated really well, and it's one of the better organizations to be a part of, especially if you have a family and your wife needs to be taken care of, your kids need to be taken care of, all those things. I think that goes really well from my understanding, and it's one of the better organizations. So I don't think players look at this organization and say, man, I need to get out of here. There's certainly times where they're frustrated with negotiations and the things that happen on the field or whatever that is. And Patrick makes a good point about what direction is the organization going as far as how quickly are they going to win. Like players want to know that, especially someone that's in their 30s. You want to know what direction the team is going. But as far as being unhappy with the organization or being treated poorly, that's not true. That I have not heard anybody complain about the way they're treated by the organization, the way they and their families are treated by the organization.
I think there are two separate issues there. On the one hand, I definitely think there's a sense of fatigue within the clubhouse in terms of like how long this has drawn on, this yes. kind of like holding pattern. And also like the players that we talk to now are a little different than the ones that we first met, what, like 7 years ago, 10 years ago? Like, there's a natural kind of, I'd say, hardening or a little bit of more cynicism or just a general awareness of, like, how the business works. And the Cubs are not exempt from that at all. But at the same time, there's no doubt the amenities, the country club atmosphere, you might even say, is appealing to players from where their spring training facility is located to how they try to think through every single detail off the field. That, I think David Ross has said this before. He said it to me again this weekend of like teams like the Cubs, the Red Sox set it up in a way to where you only have to focus on baseball, that they take care of every off the field amenity you could ever want, but that comes at a price that you better perform. They're going to expect, a division title every single year and a World Series every couple of years. Like, that's kind of the expectations, the environment that the Cubs have created. And in the end, the Cubs are probably a pretty good bet if you're trying to sign a 5-7 year contract to be good once again, sooner or later during that time frame.
I like that reference to the country club there. That explains why the Cubs wouldn't let me swim in their pool. I think that pretty much sizes things up as far as those three impending free agents go. I think if I could sum it up, it would be that we tend to think the Cubs are very open to trading Chris Bryant for a good return. But I think the caveat there that you have to keep in mind is keeping him, And whether that means maintaining that little extra bit in that relationship in case there's an opportunity to re-sign in the offseason, plus you make the qualifying offer, you get a draft pick, which is probably going to be considerably less than what you would hope to get in trade. But it's not zero value. Keeping him is not zero value. So you're weighing that against what you get in trade offer. And although, the last 5-10 years, positional impending free agents tend not to net big time impact prospects at the deadline, Chris Bryant is one of the best that's been available. I think you'd have to look at probably the Manny Machado situation a few years ago as the comp. And while he, I think, netted less than people expected, it was still 4 quality prospects. And so, I do think that we would say a Chris Bryant trade is probably more about the offers that roll in and less about some of this peripheral stuff. Whereas with Javi Baez and Anthony Rizzo, it's very hard to see an offer coming in that's going to, confer sufficient value to the Cubs that they would be like, okay, we're ready to cut ties and move on. I don't see those offers coming in. And so maybe that's where we'll leave it. The Cubs continue this Cardinals series this week. We are going to be back at you later this week with another episode of Onto Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That is Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get their stuff at The Athletic. And always, please, thanks, rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends. We always appreciate that because we love hearing from you. That reminds me, wavelandathletic@gmail.com. That's our pod. That's our email address if you want to send us your thoughts. wavelandathletic@gmail.com. Appreciate hearing from you. Appreciate you listening. And we hope you all have a good week ahead of you. Take care.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.